13's goal. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls. Today we're going to be taking a look at the top 10 signs that you might be a zombie, an 1883 UFO photo, supposed alien base found at a Chinese pyramid, hundreds of supposed giant aliens unearthed in an African village, the world's strongest laser could tear apart the fabric of space, possible non-human mummies have been found in Cusco, Peru, and how to shrink a human head. That and a lot more in the 64th episode of the 13 Skulls. Alright, welcome back everybody. I really do appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to this show. I just wanted to get one thing out of the way. I wanted to say thank you to Rojan out at the Project Archivist podcast. You can find him at projectarchivist.com. He sent me some crackers. Some Soylent Green all-natural crackers. It's really wild. Some good stuff, man. Those crackers are actually really good. I know it's people. They're made out of people. But it's really neat. I posted a link up on Facebook for the 13 Skulls of the picture of the box. I just wanted to say thank you to Rojan for that, for sending me those, man, because they're really good. But let's go ahead. We got a lot of stuff to talk about in the show, more stuff than I could possibly shake a stick at, more stuff that I can cover in the show. So go check out the show notes at the13skulls.com for episode 64, and you'll find all kinds of extra stuff that I'm not going to be able to cover in the show. Some really, really good stuff. The first thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of naturalnews.com, the 10 signs you might be a zombie. Sign number 10. If you think that bigger government is the way to solve problems that have already been caused by big government, you might be a zombie. Number 9, if you find yourself rooting for any presidential candidate other than Ron Paul, you're probably a political zombie. I don't know about that one, but sign number 8, if you drink fluoridated tap water, you are a fluoridated zombie, which is of course the whole point of fluoride. Sign number 7, if you believe what you were taught in public schools, you are definitely a zombie. Sign number 6, if all your savings are currently held in US dollars, you are most certainly an economic zombie. Sign number 5, if you only read the front of food packages and not the back, you might be a zombie. Sign number 4, if you automatically do what you're told by police officers and authorities, you might be a zombie. Sign number 3, if you find yourself mindlessly following your doctor's advice even while your sickness gets increasingly worse, you might be a zombie. Sign number 2, if you find yourself watching mainstream media news but still can't make sense of the world events, you might be a zombie. And sign number 1, if you routinely take flu shot vaccines and then wonder why you still catch the flu every winter, you might be a zombie. Now, those, I think, are maybe possibly pointed towards some political views, which I don't normally like to put into the show, but I just thought some of them were funny and had to put it into the show. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of HuffingtonPost.com. The military deleted a passage of unidentified flying object files from a 2008 Air Force personnel manual just days after the Huffington Post asked Pentagon officials about the purpose of the UFO section. Before the recent revisions, the document, Air Force Instruction 10-206, advised pilots, radar operators, and other Air Force personnel on what to do when they encountered an unknown airborne object. Now, in the 2011 version, the reference to UFOs, which simply just means unidentified flying objects, not necessarily spaceships with little green men, has been eliminated. What makes this so intriguing is that the U.S. government officially stopped investigating UFOs in 1969 with the termination of the Air Force's Project Blue Book. The 22-year study, led by high-level military officials and academic experts, ruled that UFOs were not extraterrestrial visitors, nor were they technologically advanced aircraft, and they were not a threat to national security. With that, the military essentially shut the book on flying saucer research, concluding that nothing has occurred that would support a resumption of UFO investigation by the Air Force. On September 2nd, the Huffington Post made inquiries to the Air Force about the UFO directives. A spokesman said he'd arrange an interview with an appropriate officer, but before the interview was set up, the 111-page instruction manual was revised on September 6th, and the UFO instructions were deleted, as were other portions of the document, now shortened from 111 pages to 40 pages. For several weeks, military officials failed to respond to HuffPost inquiries about the rewritten manual. Finally, on October 5th, after several follow-up calls, an Air Force major emailed a response informing the HuffPost that the UFO reporting is not a duty of the Armed Forces branch. He denied any cover-up and instead said it was a coincidence that the document was updated after the news organization asked for an explanation. That just kind of sounds just like the military to say that it was just a coincidence. Now, there is a lot more to this article here that you can go and take a look at that will explain a little bit more about what was going on, but basically that's it. There was a manual that they deleted the UFO section from, which I thought was rather odd, and the timing was kind of weird, and to say that it was a coincidence, I don't know. Was it a coincidence or was it not? I just found it to be a little bit odd. Now, this next thing I found to be really interesting. It goes along with the same military thing. It's courtesy of news.discovery.com. New radar could give soldiers X-ray vision. X-ray vision is possible for Superman, but in the real world, it's a lot harder to do. However, a couple of guys at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT, have found a way to duplicate, or at least to some extent, Superman's amazing feats. Two researchers at MIT's Lincoln Lab, John Peabody and Gregory Charvat, think they found a way around it. And involves a system of signal amplifiers and radio wavelengths. The results could lead to a new kind of radar that offers real X-ray vision to soldiers in urban combat zones. To see through walls, you would have to deal with the fact that solid objects absorb, scatter, and reflect light and radio waves. This is why X-ray machines and radars work the way they do. When a doctor takes an X-ray image, the solid bone shows up as a bright white image because other body parts, which are mostly water, allow X-rays to pass through them. If one uses an X-ray machine to take an image of an object behind a wall, the wall shows up very brightly. Only a small bit of the radiation penetrates through the wall, and an even smaller bit reflects back to the detector. Peabody and Charvat came up with the idea of amplifying the faint signal that does make it through, and subtracting out the signal produced by a concrete wall. The researchers chose the wavelengths they did because it's small enough that the radar apparatus could be about 8 feet long. Then they looked at how to filter the signal and see what was behind the wall. When a radio signal passes through the wall, hits something and bounces back, its wavelength changes. Using an analog crystal filter, they were able to build a receiver that will only pick up signals of altered wavelength. That effectively deletes the wall from the image, which basically means that then they can see through the wall and what's there. It's a fascinating thing, and I hope to see more about this, because look at the implications of what this could do if it became something that was available to the everyday public, to you and me. You know, not to mention, you know, what's going on. It makes me wonder if maybe the government already has something like this. I mean, look at the technology that the military has compared to what we have now. They say that the government or the military is years ahead of what we know. Is this technology just trickling out to MIT from the military? Or is it just something that we're honestly just on the brink of getting? I don't really know, but I found it to be really fascinating that one of these days we actually will have X-ray vision. Now let's go ahead and move on to something a little bit more disturbing. It's courtesy of Mediaite.com. A woman goes to identify her mother at a morgue and discovers that she's actually still alive. In Brazil, a young woman was called in to identify the body of her mother. When they brought out the body, Rosângela Celestrino got wonderful good news. Her mother was actually alive. The bad news? This means she was stuck in a refrigerated morgue drawer for 2 hours. It happened in a hospital in Rio de Janeiro. Celestrino says, "She went to kiss my mom, and she was breathing. I began to scream. My mother is alive, and everyone was looking at me like I was crazy." Unsurprisingly, the doctor and nurse who mistakenly decided the 60-year-old woman was dead are now out of a job. And, you know, they're just fascinating to know that in today's world, we can still claim that someone's dead, even though they're not. It's just odd. I'm really happy for the woman that her mother's still alive, because I would think that would be one of the hardest things in the world to do, is to go and have to identify the body of a loved one. You know, I just found it to be really fascinating. And, you know, it's kind of strange to know that that goes on even still today. So let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of dailymail.co.uk. The massive comet that came within a few hundred miles of hitting the Earth in 1883 with enough force to destroy mankind. The comet could have passed as close as 335 miles. When this photograph was taken in 1883, it was heralded as the first photographic evidence of a UFO. But now scientists from the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México, which I'm probably completely butchering that, believe it could have been a massive comet that came close to hitting the Earth, with a similar mass to the object that killed the dinosaurs. Mexican astronomer Jose Bonilla took the image, which appears to show something passing in front of the sun on August 12th of 1883. When it was released publicly in 1883, it was dubbed the first photo of a UFO, a series of 447 objects that looked misty and left behind a similar misty trace. A new study at the university now suggests that it was a comet breaking up into pieces. "Our working hypothesis is that what Bonilla observed in 1883 was a highly fragmented comet in an approach almost flush with the Earth's surface," writes Hector Javier Durand Manterola, the lead author of the report. "According to our calculations, the distance at which the objects passed over was between 538 kilometers and 8,062 kilometers. The width of the objects was between 46 meters and 795 meters. The mass of the original comet could have been up to 8 times the mass of Halley's Comet." There's a little bit more here to this article there that you can go and take a look at, a few pictures, and you can actually see a copy of the picture that was actually taken of this object. It, to me, just looks like a blurry black blob on this white circle with a black background. It's really kind of hard to discern really what it is. It could have been anything, really, but according to this, it was a comet or a, you know, an asteroid of some kind that was really, really, really close to the Earth. I really would have liked to have, you know, well, would have liked to have, would like to see something come by that close of that size without hitting the Earth, of course. You know, astronomy in general is fascinating to me anyway, but, you know, I just found this to be really interesting that the first photo of a UFO actually might have actually been something that could have wiped out mankind had it actually hit the Earth. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of io9.com. A UFO possibly on fire over Eureka, California. Usually when you hear about UFO sightings, the witnesses recall sleek, swift-moving vessels. The person who sighted the UFO wrote this report and submitted it to MUFON. Eureka, California, towards the south, 9 p.m. last night, 3-6-10, which would have been March 6th of 2010, which would have been a while back. I saw a very bright light in the sky, dime-sized. It was too large to be a star and much too close, the size of a dime, in the sky. All of a sudden, two sets of lights came out of it, traveling down and east. The bright objects started dumping flaming objects like coals on a barbecue. They were falling to Earth, but would extinguish before impact. When this fire stopped, two more objects with light came out again, this time flying upwards. The larger object emitted flame and cinders. I thought something would have been wrong, and it was possibly going to fall to Earth. Instead, it flew straight up until it became very small and stopped. The fire stopped. It suspended itself at that elevation until the fog covered it and I could no longer see it. I know several others stopped their cars to watch it as I did. I was in Eureka, California on California Street heading south. I looked because it was a huge bright ball in the sky resembling a very large star but too close to be a star. I thought it was a UFO as it could be nothing else. I was frightened for the people who may have lived below the object and thought possibly they were in danger of it crashing down. It's a really interesting, you know, there's not much more there. It's just an interesting thing. There's a picture there that you can go and take a look at of what this supposedly was. There, it's just a grainy picture of what looks to be this long, trailing, comet-like object. It doesn't really have any major defining areas to it. Kind of almost resembles the aurora in a way, but I want you guys to go and take a look at it and let me know what you think about the UFO that was supposedly on fire over California. Now, we're going to take a little bit of a break here. When we get back, a video of a woman who killed her husband and tried to cook him and eat him. We're also going to be looking at UFOs over Russia. It's a very interesting, odd video. A mysterious man burst into flames in Sweden. We're also going to be taking a look at how Twitter can kill you when the zombies come around. So you guys be good, stay put, we'll be back in just a minute.
Hey, have you heard about SullysCafe.com? It's your source for local music news. SullysCafe.com releases Sully's Cafe at the Green Room every Monday. It's a weekly podcast featuring interviews and performances by your favorite local artists. SullysCafe.com has a live show event calendar too, so you can plan your jams and get the inside scoop on the local music scene. SullysCafe.com. That's SullysCafe.com. Peace, love, and song.
Want to know what the buzz is all about? Go to hoodedbard.com and find out.
Project Archivist is a podcast that talks about the science of tomorrow, the lost history of our past, spirituality, and the paranormal. Join us as your hosts Rogan and Lobo take a different look at the world around us through discussion and guest interviews. Find us on iTunes or visit us in the archives at www.projectarchivist.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Now, before we get into everything, I just wanted to give a plug out to a couple of small businesses out there. JoysTeaspoon.com, great teas, great lady from what I understand. Go support small businesses. I'm a big proponent of them. She has some great teas. You can go check them out. I'll provide a link in the show notes. If not, just go to joyceteaspoon.com and order some teas if you like them. They're really, really good. I've tried a few of them. Mahalo is my favorite one so far. It's just really good tea. And also to Fat Man's Beef Jerky. You can find them at fatmansbeefjerky.com. It's really good beef jerky, lots of different types and styles of beef jerky, and it's diabetic friendly. If you're a diabetic and you love beef jerky but you can't have any, you can have this. It's safe for diabetics. So just go to fatmansbeefjerky.com and you can find some really, really good beef jerky there. So the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of Don.com. Pakistani police on Thursday arrested a woman who had killed her husband and was attempting to cook his body parts after he planned to marry another woman. The police arrested Zanib Bibi, who is 32, and her nephew Zahir, who's 22, in the Shah Faisal colony of Karachi, and recovered the bowl of flesh she planned to cook, said police chief for the area, Nadim Beg. Quote, they killed Ahmed Abbas, Zanib's husband, and chopped his body into pieces and were about to cook his flesh in a bowl, adding that the knife with which the man had been killed had been recovered. Television networks showed gruesome footage of the human flesh in a bowl ready for the stove. A neighbor had alerted the police and investigations of what was going on. Quote, there could have been two factors behind her intention to cook her husband. One is to destroy the evidence, and the other could be her immense hatred against him over his plan to marry another woman, said the police chief. Now, there is a video here, courtesy of LiveLeak.com, that I will post up in the show notes. It actually does show what was going on with this. It actually shows the cooking utensils, the pot, the bowl, the knife, the woman, everything about what was going on. It even shows a picture of the bowl with the flesh in there and a box-looking thing that actually, from what I understand, has the man's body in it. It's a very gruesome thing, so if you don't want to go watch the video, don't. I suggest against it if you have a weak stomach. But I just found it to be really interesting, a case of cannibalism, because he wanted to marry another woman. Now, this next article is courtesy of MSNBC.MSN.com. It's, you know, down here in Texas, we've had a lot of drought this year. There's a lot of lakes around here that have gone down considerably. I mean, a lot, 20 to 30 feet. And this article is courtesy of, again, MSNBC.MSN.com. There is a cemetery that has been unearthed with this lack of water, a grave site, normally at least 20 to 30 feet underwater in Bluffington, Texas. The cracked marble tombstone of John C. Parks, who died 2 days before his birthday over a century ago, his tombstone is now completely out in the sun. In the cracked marble tombstone engraved with the date October 15, 1882, which is normally covered by, again, 20 to 30 feet of water, has been eerily exposed after a year-long drought. Across the state, receding lakes have revealed a prehistoric skull, ancient tools, fossils, and a small cemetery that appears to contain the graves of freed slaves. Some of the discoveries have attracted interest from local historians, and looters also have scavenged for pieces of history. More than 24 looters have been arrested at one site. In an odd way, this drought has provided an opportunity to view and document, where appropriate, some of these finds and understand what they consist of, said Pat Mercado Allinger, the Texas Historical Commission's Archaeological Division Director. Texas finished its driest 12 months ever with an average of 8.5 inches of rain through September. We've had a little bit more since then, but not a whole lot. The vanishing water has revealed long-submerged building foundations in Woodville, Oklahoma, as well. It's just an odd thing to know that all this stuff is underwater, and nobody really would have known about it had we not had a lack of rain. It's just a really odd thing. There's a little bit more here to it that you can go and take a look at and read about. It's quite interesting. Again, there is a picture there of this gravestone for John Parks. It's, like I said, it's just fascinating. So I want you guys to go and take a look at it. Hopefully we'll be getting some more rain. And believe it or not, actually, while I'm saying this, it actually is raining here in Texas. Let's go ahead and move on to a video courtesy of LiveLeak.com of supposed alien UFOs burning up over Russia. Now, this video was taken in 2011, and there's nothing else there to it. What you're going to see is this cloudy sky with these two objects flying around either, I don't know, maybe above the clouds or maybe above and then through and below the clouds. And they're following each other in formation with these long, huge trails behind them. They're two bright objects, and they're flying around. This video is about a minute long or a little bit over. And all of a sudden, they're doing these circles, and then all of a sudden, they come back around, and they split up into multiple objects. Now, there were two of them to begin with, but they split up, and it almost looks like they turn into like four or five different objects by the end of the video. And then, you know, by the time the video's done, these objects just go away. Now, there's a massive trail behind these and a smoke trail as well. What these are, I have no idea, but I want you guys to go and take a look at the video and let me know what you think, because I just hit the microphone there. I want to know what you think about these. And they're so odd and fascinating that I just don't know what to make of them. Could it be planes in formation? I don't know because of the length of the trails behind them and the way that they move around. And the fact that they split up, it looks like there's two, and then all of a sudden they split up into what appears to be four objects. There's also, again, like I said, a smoke trail behind them that you can see well after the objects have moved away. So what are they? To me, I don't think they're missiles because I don't think they're going to be doing that kind of movement. I don't think they're flares. You guys got to go watch the video and let me know what you think, because they don't appear to be anything that I've ever seen before as far as a plane goes. I've seen contrails behind planes, but this almost looks more like what you would think a comet would look like or something along those lines moving through the Earth's atmosphere. It's a really bizarre thing. Well, it really wouldn't be a comet, just the way the trails are behind it, because these things are doing almost acrobatic movements in the sky. It's really fascinating. So let's go ahead and move on. Hey, you know, check it out. Let me know what you think. Let's go ahead and move on to another video courtesy of LiveLeak.com. Supposedly, some hunters shot what they are claiming to be is a chupacabra, which I don't really know. To me, it could just be a sloth. It could be the charred remains of a coyote. Either way, this creature, it's not very big. It has a long body, long, slender arms, big teeth in the front of its head, big claws on its feet, and it just appears to be half decayed. It doesn't appear to be anything that, well, is reminiscent of anything that I've ever seen before, but it also doesn't really appear to be anything extraterrestrial or supernatural or paranormal of any kind either. But, I mean, it could be. You never know. It just doesn't appear to be very big, and I'm not really sure what it is. I want you guys to go and watch the video, and again, let me know what you think. So, are any of you guys out there Twitter users? I know I am, but are you one of those Twitterholics, one of those tweet heads, one of those people that just can't put Twitter down? Well, this article is courtesy of zombieresearch.net, how using Twitter can kill you when the zombies come. Now, have you ever thought about this? I haven't ever thought about it either, but according to the International Center for Media and Public Affairs, your chances of living through a catastrophic zombie outbreak are severely reduced if you're online social media junkie. A study of 1,000 university students from 10 countries found that most couldn't go 24 hours without media, no matter how hard they tried. What's more, students quickly became depressed, anxious, lonely, bored, and sad without access to the technology. Dr. Gregory Jantz says, in particular, they were lost without their cell phones, which function as both Swiss Army knives and security blankets for this digital generation. Study participants reported that their mobile phones or other media are literally an extension of themselves, so going without media made it seem that they had lost part of themselves. In a zombie pandemic, all forms of social media will quickly become distant memories of a bygone era. Gone will be television, the internet, computers, and most electronics in general. If you're not able to make the psychological adjustment to this new reality, you're just as good as zombie bait. Unfortunately, this study suggests that the undead will have plenty of ready meals to choose from. I've thought about this too, and if you're my age, which I'm 36, you remember a time where you didn't have any of this stuff. Now, the generations that are growing up where they've grown up with nothing but this stuff, where this is all they've ever known, are going to have a whole lot more of a hard time with it than someone like me who remembers a time that could actually survive without it. I've gone days without getting on the computer, without getting on the internet, without getting on my phone. Now, I recently have gotten a smartphone, but I don't find myself on there as much as I thought I would before I got the phone. Anyway, I just found it to be really interesting. If you're a Twitter person and you think you can survive a zombie apocalypse, try going a couple of days without it and see what happens. Either way, I just thought it was an interesting study. Let's go to move on to the next article, which is courtesy of Cryptomundo.com. The Bluff Creek Film Site Project has found and documented what they feel to be with great certainty to be the lost Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot film site. After 4 years of investigation, two seasons of serious on-site research and filming have looked into this mysterious geography and history since 2001. This summer, Bob Gimlin again identified what he strongly felt was the spot where he and Patterson first saw the creature. From that spot, we found that a north-south access line led directly to the biggest tree on the sandbar, one we had considered the clear top candidate for one of the trees seen in the film itself. The site survey grid was done with compasses and flags, and all the old features were noted on the resultant site map produced by Ranger Robert Lederman. They show a picture of, quote-unquote, what is the big tree that's there. They also show a handwritten map of the area and, detailed landscapes of it, too. I just found it to be really interesting that a site like this for such an infamous film could have ever actually been lost. I mean, you would think that the Patterson and Gimlin would have actually known exactly where it was instead of being a little confused by it. I mean, I can take you back to places that I remember from 23 years ago when I was 13. You know, I could take you back there right now without a problem. It wouldn't be any issue. So, you know, I know it's been a little bit longer since this film was taken. So, I don't know. I just thought it'd be really interesting. So, let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of BusinessInsider.com. A Swedish man at the city of Gothenburg's train station suddenly and inexplicably burst into flames over the weekend. Police are trying to figure out who he is. According to the city's local newspaper, the Gothenburg Posten, the man was standing outside a record store near the station at about 10:30 p.m. He began to scream and burst into flames. The man was saved by a watching tram driver who, according to the newspaper, was told the man's age, who was 42, before the injured man passed out. Now, according to the local, the quest is on to find out who the victim actually is. That it may take some time, with it being reported that the man is currently under sedation and may not regain consciousness for a couple of weeks. There's not more to this article there, that's pretty much it, but is this a case of spontaneous human combustion, or did the man light himself on fire? I don't really know, but I found it to be really fascinating. I've always thought that human combustion was something that was bizarre, but, you know, actually possible. I've heard studies about this that it actually could be possible, but I don't know. Really odd stuff. Let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of openminds.tv. A Hollywood producer is claiming that he has proof of UFOs. Hollywood producer J. Herbert Klein says that UFOs do exist. At least that is the claim he makes in his new book, Beyond Hollywood, A Memoir of Fate, Luck, the Unexplained, and Living the American Dream. The book was announced via press release from International Film Arts, a production company founded by Klein and his business partner. According to the press release, Klein and Hall invented things together, including a square anamorphic lens that Klein believed could photograph the invisible, UFOs, alien life forms, energy fields, and other unexplained phenomena. The pair reportedly shot thousands of photographs using their special lens. The frequently captured images that could only be called out of this world, an example was explained in the press release. The most notable example occurred in 1977 when Klein and Hall test flight of the Space Shuttle Enterprise at Edwards Air Force Base near the Mojave Desert. From his seat as viewing section, Hall photographed the space shuttle before, during, and after the flight. When Hall developed the film, he discovered that the photographs included images of what appeared to be energy fields, UFOs, and humanoid forms that had been invisible to the naked eye. Stunned at the discovery, Hall submitted the images to one of the nation's leading manufacturers of photographic equipment, and the company's experts could find no explanation for the unusual phenomena visible in the photos. Hall died in 1979, and Klein kept the photographs in a quote-unquote safe place until deciding to write his memoir. Klein recently stated, "I'm finally ready to share my incredible story with the world." The 296-page book features approximately 100 photos taken by Klein and Hall, including many amazing shots of unexplained phenomena. You can find it at Amazon. There's a link there that you can go in and find it. Whether or not they're actually UFOs and humanoids, I don't really know. There's not much more that you can go and take a little peek at the book there. I'm scrolling through it right now, but I'm not seeing any pictures of these UFOs. So I guess you're going to have to buy the book in order to be able to actually see the pictures. But I just found it to be really interesting that there's a book out there with supposedly new evidence of unexplained phenomena. Let's go ahead and move on to something else that is more science related that I thought to be really interesting. This was sent to me, I believe, by Miles via Facebook. It's courtesy of ScienceDaily.com. A new species, quote unquote, of ultra-red galaxies have been discovered. In the distant reaches of the universe, almost 13 billion light years from Earth, a strange species of galaxy lay hidden. Cloaked in dust and dimmed by the intervening distance, even the Hubble Space Telescope couldn't spy it. It took the revealing power of NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope to uncover not one, but four remarkably red galaxies. And while astronomers can describe the members of the new species, they can't explain what makes them so ruddy. "We've gone to extremes to get the models to match our observations," said Jiaxing Huang at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, or the CFA. Huang is the lead author of the paper announcing the find. Spitzer is so sensitive to infrared light that red light lies beyond the visible part of the spectrum and it can see it and more. The newfound galaxies are more than 60 times brighter in the infrared than they are at the reddest colors Hubble can detect. All four of the galaxies are grouped near each other and appear to be physically associated rather than being a chance lineup. Due to the great distance, we see them as they were only a billion years after the Big Bang, an era when the first galaxies formed. Researchers hope to measure an accurate red shift for the galaxies, which will require more powerful instruments like the Large Millimeter Telescope or Atacama Large Millimeter Array. There's evidence for others in other regions of the sky. We'll analyze more Spitzer and Hubble observations to track them down, said Giovanni Fazio of the CFA. It's just fascinating. There's a picture there that you can go and take a look at it. I take that back. It's not a picture. It's an artist's conception of these four galaxies and their red shift. It's just really fascinating that every day science is discovering something new. It really is just absolutely fascinating. Now, there's a website that I wanted to point you guys in the direction of called UFOstalker.com. And basically what this is like a Google map of UFO sightings from all over the world. It's live MUFON event report feed. You can click on any of the maps icons for event details. You can, you know, basically look to see what's going on in that area. I just thought it to be really interesting if you're a fan of MUFON. If you're not, don't bother checking it out, but I'll post a link up to it. So we're going to go ahead and take one more break here before we finish up with everything that's in the show. We're going to be looking at mass alien abduction experiments and how researchers are saying that it's all in your head. We're also going to be taking a look at some giants that were supposedly unearthed in Africa, and the world's most powerful laser could tear apart the vacuum of space. That and quite a bit more. So you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
I've spoken with members of the Shuar tribe, and they are famous throughout the world for being the people who know how to shrink a human head. And they live in Ecuador, and this is how they say it's done. First stage, kill your enemy. You don't do this to friends. You kill your enemy and chop his head off, leaving a decent amount of neck flap underneath the head. Then, second stage, absolutely crucial, you need to crush and remove the human skull. So you break it up with rocks and pull it out of the neck and all of the brain matter and everything else. So you're left with basically a head bag. This head bag is then boiled in water with, I think, herbs and spices added to tan it, like with leather. And that is effectively shrinking it in the same way you would shrink any leather if you boiled it. And then what you really need to do is get out all of the last little bits of fatty tissue from, like, say, around the lips. You need to get rid of that, and you use hot sand from the fire to get rid of those. So you push it into the head saying, get rid of all the fatty tissue around the lips, and then pull that out. Then you have to sew up the eyes and the mouth so that the soul of your vanquished enemy cannot see you and cannot call for vengeance. Then you have won.
All right, well, everybody, we're going to go ahead and move on to another article courtesy of beforeitsnews.com. It's an experiment that was conducted at UCLA. Many were contacted by quote-unquote aliens during an experiment conducted by the OOBE Research Center at UCLA. It was the first experiment to ever, quote-unquote, prove that close encounters with UFOs and extraterrestrials are a product of the human mind. 20 volunteers assembled at UCLA on October 7th. They were instructed to perform a specific procedure upon overnight and early morning awakenings over the next few days. More than half of the volunteers experienced at least one full or partial out-of-body experience as a result. Seven of them reported making visual contact with UFOs or extraterrestrials. Meanwhile, the sensations they described were identical to those of accounts by alien abduction survivors. By some estimates, up to 1 million Americans experience such encounters every year. According to the researchers, the term, quote-unquote, out-of-body experience is used to refer to the sensation of having left the body and not a real exit of some essence from the physical body, although this is just an impression often had by test subjects. The fact that UFOs and extraterrestrials may be deliberately encountered in a controlled manner and within a few days proves that such experiences are a product of the human brain. Experiment author Michael Raduga explained, "We tried to right a common misconception with this experiment. The issue at hand isn't extraterrestrials, but hidden human abilities. If you've ever encountered a UFO or aliens after sitting or lying down, it can now be unequivocally stated that you've experienced a spontaneous out-of-body experience. We've proven this. It has long been theorized that encounters with extraterrestrials are nearly always the result of spontaneous out-of-body experiences. However, scientific proof would have to wait until the discovery of methods for inducing the out-of-body state. In September 2007, the OOBE Research Center started to conduct hundreds of experiments on thousands of people in five different countries. The work resulted in the development of a procedure allowing anyone to have an out-of-body experience within the first several attempts. This procedure, in turn, allowed for the OOBE theory of extraterrestrial encounters to be tested and proven correct. The experiment was led by Michael Raduga, founder and head of the OOBE Research Center, as well as the author of 10 published books. Now, there is a full research thing that you can go and take a look at. It's courtesy of research.obe4u. That's O-B-E, the number 4, the letter U.com. Research.obe4u.com. You can go to this Before It's News article that I'll link to, and down at the bottom of the article, you'll find that link to that research and actually check it out a little bit for yourself. It's called the Alien Abduction Experiment. There is a press release PDF there. They show the aim of the experiment, the test subjects, the methods, the outcome, the validity of the results. People experience these out-of-body times, these out-of-body experiences, and they seem extremely real. So if it's real to you, does that mean it's not real, that it's all just an imaginatory thing? If it's real to you, it's real to you. That's the way I see it. Either way, let's move on to another article, which is courtesy of BeforeIt'sNews.com. A team of daring Chinese researchers digging into the ancient mysteries of the origin of their country have come to the inescapable conclusion that 12,000 years ago, an interstellar supreme alien race used much of the northern and central Chinese regions as a massive Earth base. One such base may be the astonishing pyramid structure that sits near the apex of Mount Beigong in the western province of Qinghai, the Jianyang Pyramid. China is the focus of legends, myths, and stories of alien visitations. Local villagers claim that their distant ancestors spoke of great skyships that navigated the heavens and used the pyramids as a landing, refueling, and resupply site. The hypothesis regarding extraterrestrials is understandable and worth looking into, but scientific means must be employed to prove whether or not it's true, said Yang Zhi, one of the scientists and a researcher at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. While the scientific exploration team agrees, all indications are that aliens use the giant structure as one of the primary Earth bases. The anomalous pyramid rises 200 feet above the countryside. The surrounding area is littered with mystifying pipes, bizarre artifacts, and unworldly odds and ends. China's state-run Xinhua agency sent a 9-man team to investigate the pyramid and report back on their findings. The team discovered pipes running from the caves and deep into the ground, slanting down into the earth. But towards what? The agency tersely said, "The pyramid has 3 caves with openings shaped like triangles on its facade, and is filled with red-hued pipes leading into the mountain and a nearby saltwater lake. Above the caves are dozens of pipes, all of various diameters, that mysteriously run into the mountainside beneath the towering pyramid. All the pipes match the color of the surrounding rocks, a murky reddish-brown. Elsewhere, more pipes, many lying shattered, are scattered littering the ground in every direction. Some of the pipes follow the bank of a salty lake, where others dip into the water and plunge beneath the lake bed. The pyramid complex stretches out much further than what is visible, and evidence suggests a highly technological network of pressurized pipes supplying water and possibly fuels. Since the ancient site dates back at least 10,000 years BCE and is perhaps twice as old as that, no humans could have engineered it, as no serious human culture existed that long ago." Qin Jianwen, the head of the publicity department at the Dalinga government, says fragments of some of the pipe material were taken for analysis. The pieces were found to be mostly silicon dioxide and calcium oxide, although more than 8% of the metal could not be identified. The large content of silicon dioxide and calcium oxide is a result of a long interaction between iron and sandstone, which means the pipes must be very old, said Liu Shaolin, an engineer who did the analysis, explained. How old? Some are guessing 12,000 years, and possibly much older than that. It's just a really odd thing. There's more to it there. There's a couple of different pages of this that you can go and read about. And there's some pictures there of the pyramid itself and of these pipes. What would be the point of this? You know, if the pyramids are 12,000 years old, then that means they're possibly older than the pyramids at Giza in Egypt, and possibly some of the oldest structures known to man. What would the pipes be for? I mean, obviously they said that it could be for, you know, bringing water from this lake to the pyramid, but why? If there was no significant civilization of humans living at the time in the area, how would the pyramids have even been built? Either way, I found it to be really interesting. Like I said, there's more to it there that you guys can go and take a look at and read up more on the Chinese pyramids and how they were possibly an alien base. So let's go ahead and move on to another article, which again is courtesy of BeforeIt'sNews.com, as well as the last article was, supposedly giant aliens have been unearthed near an African village. According to a scientific report filed by a team of anthropologists digging in Central Africa, up to 200 gigantic alien bodies entombed for 5 centuries have been unearthed. Upon the discovery, village elders urged the people to flee, and some women fled screaming, clutching their infants. But the African find is only the latest in a string of alien body discoveries stretching back some 70 years. Now, there's some pictures here of what is supposedly one of the aliens that they actually found, and it looks to be, to me, a little bit fake. I don't really know, but it seems as if the anthropologists and archaeologists dig hard enough, deep enough, and long enough, sooner or later, alien bodies will surface, according to this article. 1937 was a banner year for alien corpses in China. That was the year several scrawny alien cadavers were allegedly discovered. All had huge heads and buried in caves nearby where mysterious discs that came to be called the Dropa stones were found. Fast forwarding several decades, archaeologists breaking into a small pyramid in Egypt claim to have found a giant alien-like humanoid, which there's a picture of here that you can go and take a look at. It is quite a bit bigger than a human head and looks to be somewhat similar to a human head, but the corpse was not wrapped nor dressed in a traditional Egyptian burial shroud or garb, but was clothed in an odd metallic tunic. Its feet were adorned with shoes and slippers that had a look and similar feel to vinyl. The tomb itself was odd. The stone to the entrance had to be smashed apart by the team because the rock was fused and melted. Inside the eerie burial chamber, the interior walls seemed polished and partly covered with thin, hanging sheets of a substance having the consistency of lead. It's very odd there. You can go and take a look at some of the stuff that they found inside this tomb. But back in Africa, as many as 40 mass graves were reportedly discovered at the dig. The large clay pits contained hundreds of well-preserved cadavers. Supposedly, the remains of the unworldly creatures were tall, measuring as much as 7 feet or more in length. But despite the size of the creatures' legs, arms, and torsos, their heads were described as huge and distinctly disproportionate compared to their bodies. Allegedly, the partially mummified remains of the enigmatic creature showed no evidence of normal human facial features. One of the scientific team called the discovery momentous and stunning. Intense exploration of the region around the alien cemetery did not reveal the slightest trace of any anomalous artifacts or the telltale remains of an ancient damaged spacecraft. Despite their failure to discover any hard evidence, the team believes it's possible that the humanoids were crew members aboard a large alien vessel that crashed and became incapacitated. They speculate that gradually the crew succumbed to common earthborne diseases. It's a very odd thing. They don't really show too much in the way of the beings themselves, these 100 or 200 alien beings that they said they found. But either way, I thought it to be really fascinating. There are still some interesting pictures and some interesting links to other sites that you can go and take a look at. Either way, if we did find hundreds of giant aliens, are they actual aliens? Or maybe is this some kind of new species that just was here on Earth that we're just now finding out about? Either way, I don't really know. But let's go ahead and move on to an article that I found to be really interesting because I really find it to be fascinating. The Easter Island Heads. This is courtesy of seeker401.wordpress.com, and apparently some of the Easter Island heads have bodies. The Easter Island Statue Project, or EISP, is a private research program and archive created by Joe Ann Van Tilburg, principal investigator and EISP founder and director with Christian Paccarati, Rapa Nui artist and co-director of EISP. The profound and immediate need for conservation actions on the Moai became apparent over the course of more than 20 years of subjective observation and field experience acquired by these people during our island-wide archaeological survey, which was conducted in association with our Chilean and Rapa Nui colleagues. The Easter Island Statue Project office is located in Santa Monica, California. It's really odd, and there's not much more here to this article there, but you can go and take a look at the statue itself. Now, I never would have figured that these things would have had bodies, that the Easter Island statue heads would have ever had bodies. Now, some of them do, the smaller ones do have bodies, but this one is ginormous. I would say this thing is a good 60 feet long from top to bottom. And if it is, that moving the heads by themselves would have been quite the feat. But to move something of this size for the technology that the people that lived there had is absolutely astounding. It really is. How would you move this? We would have a hard time moving something like this today, but this thing is a good, like I said, 60 feet or more in length. I just found it to be really interesting that the Easter Island heads have bodies. So you guys go and take a look at that and let me know what you think. This next article is courtesy of news.yahoo.com. The world's most powerful laser could tear apart the vacuum of space. Scientists have plans to create a giant laser that can emit a beam with an amount of energy equivalent to all of the power the Earth receives from the sun. It is believed such a laser will have the ability to rip apart the vacuum of space, literally boil the underlying fabric of the universe. And they're being really serious. This is coming from Richard Gray of The Telegraph. This veritable death ray won't be used to further the aspirations of an evil genius, at least not right now. Scientists hope to prove the existence of tiny bits of matter, pairs of molecules known as ghost particles, that are believed to hide in the vacuum of space but have so far not been detected by any other means. In addition, scientists hope that the laser can help prove the existence of other dimensions. This laser will be 200 times more powerful than the most powerful lasers that currently exist, said Professor John Collier, a leader of the project and director of the UK's Central Laser Facility. At this kind of intensity, we start to get into unexplained territory, as it is an area of physics that we have never seen before. Dubbed the Extreme Light Infrastructure Ultra High Field Laser, or ELI, the project is expected to be completed within the next 10 years and cost about $1.6 billion. The ultra-high-field laser will be made up of 10 beams, allowing it to produce 200 petawatts of power, more than 100,000 times the power of the world's combined electricity production for less than a trillionth of a second. In order to achieve such a massive power output, energy for the laser must be collected for a long period of time before it's fired. The European Commission has approved plans to build three prototype lasers, each about half as powerful as the ELI Ultra High Field Laser will be, and each will cost about $320 million. There's an original post here from Digital Trends, which you can go and take a look at, but that's pretty much it. They're going to be looking for ghost particles. They're supposed to be undetectable. And you're putting out this kind of power. I mean, that is a massive, massive amount of power. 100,000 times the power of the world's combined electricity production. That's insanely intense. I'm anxious to hear about what this, what goes on with this. And I'm kind of scared to hear about what goes on with this. It's a rather frightening venture, but then again, so is the LHC. So the Large Hadron Collider. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to a picture that was taken at a lake of a supposed little ghost girl. It's courtesy of paranormal.about.com. The person who took the picture said, "I took this picture of my husband fishing at a very remote lake in northern Wisconsin. This lake has no boat launch and no homes are on the lake. We had to hike into the lake through brush and weeds. I took the picture in the early 1990s. It wasn't for some time after that I developed it and realized it appears to have a young girl, possibly wearing a pinafore or bonnet, is off to the right side of my husband. Everyone was so intrigued by the photo because there was nobody there. I had the photo hanging on my fridge for years, so it got a few scratches, but the image is quite clear. The area was once a busy logging area. The plague hit and many young children died. There's a cemetery in the area, Star Lake Cemetery, with all of their graves. If I had to guess, I'd say it's maybe a child spirit or possibly a Native American child spirit. I don't know. I just know nobody was there when we took the picture." Is this just a strange artifact in, I don't know. It's a hard one. It looks like a little girl standing behind the guy. It really does. But at the same time, if you look at the way it's set up, it very easily could just be the way that everything in the picture is set up for it to look like a human. Pareidolia, where we look to see something that's not there. We see a face in the clouds. It's not really a face. It just so happens to be that it looks similar to it, and our mind makes us think that it's a face. Now, this does look like a little girl, but at the same time, it looks like it could just be, a compilation of different images put together that is making you think it's a little girl. It does look like a little girl in a dress, but at the same time, it could just be a strange setup of the artifacts of what was in the picture. It's just an odd thing. But either way, I want you guys to go and take a look at the picture of the supposed ghost girl that's standing behind a guy at the lake. It's a really odd picture. Speaking of odd pictures, this next article is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com. And thanks to Lon out there at Phantoms and Monsters for posting this. Supposedly, this is an alien body in Russia that's been kept in a freezer. They were posted in a Russian blog earlier this week. It looks like this strange, really large mouth, kind of frog-looking creature. I've never seen anything like it before. It slightly resembles Jabba the Hutt. If you've ever seen a Star Wars movie, the face of this thing looks like Jabba the Hutt. It looks like that kind of a creature. An old lady from Petrozavodsk City reported that she had been keeping a frozen alien body in a refrigerator for a couple of years. The alien was found next to the woman's summer house. The body was said to be, quote-unquote, very hot, and that metal fragments were lying beside it. Before finding the body, the lady heard a terrible noise. The creature is about 40 to 50 centimeters long, had a big head, mouth, and eye orbits. It was also wearing a one-piece garment. 2 days ago, the lady was visited by some people who confiscated the body for the purposes of investigation, and according to their words, took it to the Karelian Research Center of the Russian Academy of Sciences. However, employees of the Russian Research Center who were interviewed later said that they had never heard of the discovery. So, where was the body taken? Nobody really knows, and that's kind of the odd part about it. This creature isn't all that big, has really thin arms, or maybe it's a tentacle sticking out there. I don't know. It almost looks to be a little bit on the fake side. And why is it whenever something like this turns up, it always seems to disappear, that all we have is a photo or a sketchy video? Either way, I want you guys to go and take a look at this Jabba the Hutt-looking alien creature that apparently isn't very big, and all you see is the body of it you can't really see. All you can see is the head, and the body of it is covered in this plastic wrap, and it looks like it has something wrapped around its body and then wrapped in plastic. You can't really see much about it. There's one picture of it there in the refrigerator, and then there's a couple of pictures of it with like a yardstick or a ruler next to it. It looks to be maybe a couple of feet long at the most, but it's just an interesting picture, and I want you guys to go and take a look at it. Now, this next article is courtesy of Bregalia.blogspot.com. I found this article just the other day, and supposedly Roswell memory metal has been found on an official film of the B-2 stealth bomber. The Northrop Grumman B-2 Spirit is an advanced military aircraft that has a unique capability of far-ranging altitudes and distances. Introduced in 1997 with an alleged first flight in 1989, there are just 22 of them in the world. They incorporate low-observing stealth technology. Some have speculated that they may even utilize anti-gravity technologies or that they possess some other exotic features that are kept from public view. But it may not always be as possible to keep such features from outside detection. One officially released film of the B-2 bomber in its flight that is very revealing may have somehow escaped the scrutiny of U.S. Air Force sensors. A recently discovered segment of this video appears to show another of the B-2 stealth's capabilities, the ability to morph. This brief clip seems to demonstrate the craft's morph of the metal skin of its outer hull. This would allow it to intelligently perform critical functions and perhaps to self-heal if damaged by enemy actions. The remarkable film shown comes from a broadcast by the Military Channel. The Military Channel is a distinguished specialty cable station that is owned by the media corporation that also owns the Discovery Channel and the Animal Planet Channel. Rebroadcast on YouTube, the footage is entitled B-2 Spirit Stealth Bomber, and simply shows views of the stealth on the ground and in flight from various angles for about 4 minutes. It's a PR film, but despite its garnering over 1.8 million views, nobody appears to have made any mention in the comments section about the morphing metal hull. You can actually go and click and watch the video here. There's a link to it there, called The Morphing Skin of a B-2 Bomber in Flight. The film is 3 minutes 51 seconds in length. Viewing the entire film, it becomes rather evident that it is a USAF-issued video. At approximately the 2 minute 40 second mark, and for the duration of about 3 seconds, one can clearly observe a gape or opening in the topside front of the craft that it seems to self-close. Now, I'm going to scan on up here. Here we go. Let's go ahead and play this. I want to watch this while we're doing this and see exactly what they're talking about. Well, see, that's the thing. I'm watching this right now, and you can kind of get an idea of this, of what's going on, but it doesn't really appear to be morphing. What it looks like is that it has a seamless closing to some certain vents or something that's on the craft. You know, they are seamless, and it almost does look surreal. But if you look at it really closely and know anything about the military, they make things that are just crazy compared to what we know in real life. But we do have things that are seamless that you would never know that there's a seam there. There's certain types of tables that you can buy that can be put together that look completely and utterly seamless. You would never know where the seam is. And that's kind of the way this craft is. With the way these vents shut, you can't see them from the distance you're looking at it. You know, the distance that the one plane that's filming the B-2 is away from the B-2, the distance that they're apart from each other, you're not going to be able to see these grooves, these seams. Now, if you're right up on it and you could actually visualize it and see it right then, right there, you know, up close on it, you could probably see the seams. But either way, I want you guys to go and take a look at this video and let me know what you think about whether or not the B-2 stealth bomber had anything to do with Roswell and the memory metal that was supposedly found there, and whether or not this seamless closing of these vents or whatever they are actually the aircraft healing itself, for a lack of better terms. Either way, let's go ahead and move on to one of the last two articles that I wanted to take a look at. It's supposedly a Russian UFO, a saucer-shaped Russian UFO. It's a rather odd thing. It's courtesy of LiveLeak.com. And for some reason, the video is not working. I'm having to refresh that. I wanted to see. Okay, here we go. So it's about 53 seconds long, and you can actually see this saucer-shaped object. It almost looks slightly balloon-shaped, but saucer-shaped. You can see him pulling it out onto this long runway down this long, I don't even know what it is, I guess this road that they're taking it on, but it is a saucer-shaped craft. And according to the date stamp on some of these, it occurred in 1992, when they were filming this on August 28th of 1992 at approximately 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Not only did the Nazis supposedly have saucer-shaped craft, but so did we here in the United States, and apparently so did the Russians. Are a lot of these UFOs, saucer-shaped crafts, something that people are seeing, something like this that they're actually seeing that's really nothing more than just a man-made object? And these things are huge, huge. It's about the size of a blimp. I mean, these things are, I would say, if I was to estimate, a good 100 to 150 feet across, probably 75 to 80 feet tall, if not more than that. Very, very odd-looking structure, and it doesn't actually show it flying, so there's a little bit there that takes away from the credibility of actually being something people have seen worldwide. But either way, I just thought it was really interesting. Let's go ahead and move on to the last article, which I just found today. It's courtesy of Grenzwissenschaftaktuell.blogspot.com. I can't speak German very well, so I probably mispronounced that completely. But the German parliament has been ordered to give access to secret UFO files. The Administrative Court of Berlin has decided that the German parliament, the Deutsche Bundestag, has to give access to a so far secret official report compiled by the Scientific Research Service of the German Parliament on demand of the delegates on the question of the government's knowledge and studies about UFO and extraterrestrial life. However, the parliament has already appealed against the decision. The article is a translation of the original German article. The right of access to the official information under the German Freedom of Information Act also applies to studies and reports of the Scientific Research Service of Bundestag, the Berlin Administrative Court explained in its decision announcement on December 1st of 2011. Until the court hearing, the Bundestag denied access to the paper by referring to the claim that the work and results of the Scientific Research Service of the Bundestag are part of the work of the parliament and the mandatory work of the delegates, and therefore should be excluded from demands referring to the Freedom of Information Act. In its press release, the administrative court explained further that the judge did not agree with this claim of the parliament and therefore did not follow the complaint upheld by the Bundestag, and instead ordered that it must give the claimant insight into the secret report. The court also denied the claim that such a process would represent a violation of the intellectual property of the research service. While the court ordered the described insight into the paper, in the face of the fact that the decision has a fundamental importance for the question of how to deal with reports by the scientific service, it also allowed the Bundestag to apply for appeal to the Supreme Administrative Court of Berlin, a step that under German law is only granted if the law is not explicit. Observers speculate that the persistence with which the Bundestag denied and still tries to deny the insight into the UFO paper, or even its publication, is not a treated subject, in this case UFOs and extraterrestrial life, but in general about the questions of dealing with reports and papers by the Scientific Research Service in the future and in the face of the Freedom of Information Act in general. Besides stating that because so many other NATO members, partners, and neighboring countries such as France, the US, Belgium, and the United Kingdom and Italy did investigate UFOs, it is more than likely that also official German authorities and departments dealt with this question about the existence of UFOs and extraterrestrial life. The report does not reveal any secrets about UFO and alien life, nor a secret knowledge about it by the German government. As part of the worldwide disclosure and exopolitik movement, Exopolitik German, or exopolitik.org, is pursuing the release of reportedly secret knowledge and information by governments, military, and intelligence services. In an interview with the German online news magazine on the paranormal and edge science, the Griswissenschaft Aktuell, or GREWI.DE, Robert Fleischer, who is the coordinator of the Exopolitik Germany, commented on the court's decision as follows, quote, "The decision represents a first step in the direction of a true freedom of information, also in Germany. I am optimistic that following decisions will follow the current decision. Sooner or later, also the German government has to tell the truth about the knowledge about UFOs. 19 other countries have done this already. Such a step would also be important to avoid useless speculations and conspiracy theories about this question." There's nothing more to this article here, but I found it to be really interesting that the parliament has been ordered to give access to secret UFO reports. Granted, most countries, you know, do have secret government reports, but are they going to release the most intriguing and the most wild reports and photos and video and evidence that they have? I don't know. But I'm going to have to keep my eye out on this. I want to know more, and I want to know exactly what it is that they're going to put out there, what it is that they're actually going to give access to, if they do it all. So, you guys, I hate to say this is the end of the show. We're going to have to close out and do all the formalities. We're going to take one last break here, and when we do, we'll close out the show.
Fabric slow decay. Spirit of man, run it free. It takes its toll on our soul. You ask for rain in the sky. Question the answers deep in lies. It's the punishment they cry. I see humanity's disease. I doubt there's anything left. Anything left was saved. I know our heartache's not enough.
Well, guys, gals, you know, I hate to do it. I know it's been a while since the show came out, but I'm going to do my best to get another show out before Christmas comes along. Since it is the end of the show, let's go ahead and bury the formalities and get them out of the way. If you have an experience or feedback to share with me, you can email me at the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com. Or you can give me a call at 817-986-0019. If I have them, if not, either way, I will provide a link up to ufoclearinghouse.webs.com that I will link to in the show notes for all the recent UFO sightings. Thank you to all of you who have given a review in iTunes. I really do appreciate it. If you want, The 13 Skulls is in iTunes. Give me a review. I would love to see what you think about the show. Just search The 13 Skulls and look for the one. There's going to be two icons that show up when you search for The 13 Skulls. Go with the one that has reviews. One doesn't, one does. Pick the one that does and give me a review there. I can't figure out how to delete the one feed from iTunes. It's driving me nuts. Also, I've added the show, The 13 Skulls, to Stitcher. So if you want, go to Stitcher.com, look for The 13 Skulls, and you can stream it right there from your iPad, your tablet, your smartphone, whatever you want. You can listen to it there. If you like the music in the show, you can listen to it. It's courtesy of the Iota Promonet at www.iotaalliance.com. And the sound effects you've been hearing in all the shows are courtesy of the Freesound Project at freesound.org. If you have a podcast, radio show, or book or anything like that and you want to swap promos, please do. I'd love to be able to play it in the show. If you are a gearhead like me and you like muscle cars, then you need to listen to the Muscle Car Place podcast at themusclecarplace.com. I've just found them. They're a great show. It's a great podcast about anything and everything to do with muscle cars. New shows come out roughly about every week, and you can get some really good interviews and a lot of great information about muscle cars and what's going on with them, old and new and everything else, so go check them out. If you want a button or magnet, just email me and I'll get one out to you ASAP. Again, I'll be posting everything you've heard about in the show notes, so you can go and check them out. There's going to be a lot of stuff that I wasn't able to cover in this show, so go check them out. There's going to be a lot of extra stuff in the show notes that I wasn't able to cover in the show, so go check them out. There's a lot of good stuff, the13skulls.com. So, you guys and gals, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I really do appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to the show. I really appreciate the support. You guys are great. I hope you guys have a great day, night, week, weekend, whatever it is that you're listening to this. And I'll talk to you again on another day. As we drop into the unknown, we vow that none shall stand alone. As we drop into the unknown, we vow that none shall stand alone. I see you.